how you describe me in the future. No, 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 no. We're many words. You didn't learn the lesson.
I said venerable.
Easy to get tongue-tied with that one, buddy. Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Five Stones Community Church. I am Bill Ludwig, the venerable Bill Ludwig, I guess, and it's my privilege to be with you this morning. We have been, I think we've been enjoying a season of preparation, the season of Lent, a season of preparing our heads and our hearts as we move closer to Resurrection Day and our understanding of all that that means, not just in that moment and in that time, but for every day of our lives. And so we've been exploring through the Gospel of Luke, through Jesus's his teaching, also the way that he sort of modeled his life of prayer. So we've chosen prayer as sort of the vehicle that we're going to, or we have been, preparing ourselves with as we've gotten into this season of Lent. And I want to remind you that not just during this season, but we started during this season, that during the service, towards the end of the service, if you wish to have some prayer for whatever it is that you want to be prayed for, we have some people that gather there behind those curtains, a little bit of privacy, so that they can pray for you. So go ahead and seek them out at the end if that is your desire. We've been taking this journey now for a few weeks, and just so that we can land in the spot together where we can start at the same place today, I want to catch us up with a quick review. So we've been going through this season of Lent. We've been talking about spiritual disciplines as related to prayer. This idea of practicing prayer as a spiritual discipline really sharpens our senses, opens our ears, our eyes, our minds, our hearts up to what God is doing, what he wants to give us, and what he wants us to give away. So we talk about spiritual disciplines in that way, that when we practice them, it positions us to live in this life that God's called us to live. And so we live expectantly, understanding that the Holy Spirit lives in us and is active, doing the things that God desires both in us and through us as we live in this life. So another week, we talked about temptation. We looked at Jesus's model of this in the wilderness. We talked about how temptation really is about choice, choosing faithfulness or unfaithfulness to this big picture that God is telling about the kingdom of heaven. We're either faithful to live into that reality or we're not. And that is what temptation is about. We talked about being specific and contextual. We talked about how Jesus was maybe tired, and so he's tempted in that way. We know that he was fasting, so he was hungry, so he was tempted in that way, and so are we. Temptation comes to us, the test comes to us in very predictable ways, at predictable times, and it's predictable and contextual, and therefore, as we live into this way of praying our way through the test, the trial, it ought to also be contextual and sort of specific to the trial that we are facing. So no 10,000-foot view, God just protect me, God save me, God deliver me. No, specifics from what's happening. And God promises us that he will be present in our test and he will deliver us. So we kept moving through this walk in the Gospel of Luke with Jesus. And we looked at how anything that he did that was specific, that was powerful, whether it was right before he did something powerful or important, or it was after he poured himself out, he would get away with his Father in solitude. So we talked about how he modeled that for us. Anytime you've got something coming up, get away with Jesus. Anytime you've just been through something, whether it's something at work, or you're grieving, or something big that you've been working towards, and you've poured yourself out, get away with Jesus and be refilled. Or if you have some big decisions that are coming up, get away with Jesus in solitude and listen. And last week, we explored through what we commonly refer to as the Lord's Prayer, this idea of praying in dependence on our Father. So this is what Jesus really models for us, as we discovered last week. We looked at, how he really sets us up in this prayer of kind of proclaiming who we are and who he is, that our God, our Holy Father, hallowed be your name, as many of us have memorized it. Just Dad, you're a different kind of dad, and you live in a different kind of way, and you interact with us in very specific ways. And those ways look a lot like putting everything back the way it's supposed to be, of fulfilling the needs that we have, that we can depend upon him because he's different. And we have this relationship with him as sons and daughters. This week, we're looking at this idea of persevering in prayer, persisting in prayer. And we arrive in this space in the 18th chapter of Luke, where we're going to camp out for a little bit today. And we're going to encounter a few stories. We're going to encounter one story in particular, but this whole 18th chapter is really unique in the sense that it kind of gives us glimpses into several different stories as we go through. And the characters in these stories are pretty, on one hand, they're kind of normal people, and on the other hand, they're kind of unusual how their characters play out. So we're going to specifically focus on a desperate widow and a judge that kind of only cares for himself. But in the rest of that chapter, if we were to explore it more, we would encounter a self-righteous religious person and a really desperate person that understands that they're broken and in need of God's deliverance. We would encounter innocent children and preoccupied disciples that want to keep the children away from Jesus. Children that are seeking him and disciples of Jesus that are trying to keep him away. And then we would also encounter this very wealthy, very influential, powerful person. And the other character in that story is that person's stuff. If you can have stuff as a character. And so we take that all together, and it's kind of a context in itself of exploring these characters in a bigger context in these chapters where Jesus is really talking quite a lot about the kingdom of heaven. And that's going to be a key factor that we explore today. But as we get into chapter 18, I want to set you up for success today. So we're going to see a short video. And the word of the day, we're gonna call it persistence today. So the word of the day is persistence. Perseverance is a root. It's connected there, so persistence. You ready to see this video? It's going to set you up for success. Speaking of characters.
You can't give up. You have to be persistent. So if you really, really want to do something, it pays to be persistent. Like my red furry friend there. Come on, Emma. Let's play.
Persistent! You go first.
Thank you for coming. I hope you enjoyed your time here this morning. Elmo just knocked it out of the park. This really is the thing for today. The word for the day is persistence, right? As Jesus kind of begins to tell this story, he opens up with these words. Jesus tells them a story showing that it was necessary for them to pray consistently and never quit. What did we just learn was the definition of persistence? To keep going, right? To not quit, to keep pushing through. And so Jesus is telling his followers a story about being persistent, moving towards something and not quitting at it. So praying in this way. This is sort of a classical theme in the New Testament. And I just, we're not going to go there, but I just want to just kind of read a few of these ideas to reinforce that this is the meaning of the text for today, and really the point that if you walk out of here with nothing else, you're going to walk out of here with praying persistently, okay? Romans 12 says that we ought to be constant in prayer. 1 Thessalonians says we ought to pray without ceasing. Colossians says we ought to continue steadfastly in prayer. And then Ephesians says in English that I appreciate, just pray all the time. Pray all the time, right? So this is a theme that gets picked up and it gets repeated over and over and over again. And it is the main point of this section of the story in the Gospel of Luke in terms of Jesus's demonstrating his life of prayer and also teaching us how to pray. Praying persistently. Let's dive back into Luke 18. He said, there was once a judge in some city who never gave God a thought and cared nothing for people. Remember, I told you we're going to encounter these characters. Not maybe as colorful as Elmo, but characters nonetheless with real stories, even though it appears as if Jesus is using this guy as a prop. Some judge in some city, right? Who never gave God a thought and cared nothing for people. So this is a fictitious or otherwise. This is a human being who doesn't care for God or people. So what would we call a person that doesn't give a rip what other people think and doesn't pay any attention to God? What would we call them? Be kind. Selfish, self-centered, self-interested. Somebody selfish, right? So this is a selfish person. The beauty of this, if there's beauty in this, is that they're a judge. They're a judge. So think about the sort of the dichotomy, the weird kind of juxtaposition of the internal dynamics of this character. They're selfish, self-interested, but they're a judge. What are judges supposed to be? Impartial. What else? Fair. What else? I didn't catch it. They're supposed to make decisions on behalf of other people, right, who struggle for some reason to have those decisions made for them. Makes sense. So right away, Jesus is telling this story, and he's giving us the picture of this human being whose vocation it is to be really committed to the well-being of other people, and yet he also sets them up as being selfish and self-centered. Now, here comes the next character. A widow in that city kept after him. My rights are being violated. Protect me. This sounds like the kind of thing that someone would come to a judge for, right? My rights are being violated, protect me. Now, what do we know about widows? Because we're looking at these characters deeply in this story. What do we know about widows at this time? They're the most vulnerable people on the entire planet, these widows, right? The history, I'm not telling us anything that we haven't heard before, the history of how women have been seen around the world throughout the ages, it's not always been just. It's not always been great. It's not always been fair. It's not always been even or even helpful. And so this woman can't own property on her own, and so she's completely dependent first upon her father's family and then upon her husband's family. But what do we know? Her husband has passed away, so she is literally defenseless and helpless. She doesn't have a voice of her own, so she comes to the judge and says, "Be my voice. I am experiencing injustice. Please come and protect me," she says. My rights are being violated. Protect me. Let's just dial this in because we've got to bring ourselves back around to this idea of persistence. But before we get there, I want us to make sure that we can feel a little something for both of these characters in the story. The judge, it's his vocation. They're fairly powerful, influential people. Not just this guy, but kind of rampant amongst the culture there. It was a culture of bribery. You know, if you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. You know, kind of the way things go in big, complicated societies. You know, the machine has to work somehow. And instead of always working the way we think it's supposed to, there's There's some backroom deals. There's some bribery. There's that kind of thing. And so here's this guy. And to be fair, how many of us show partiality to people that show partiality to us? I mean, let's not just completely throw this guy under the bus. If you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. It's kind of the way of things. So we can't just completely make this guy a villain. And we can kind of understand him just a little bit. And then we have this widow whose rights have been violated. She's experienced some injustice. And I'm just going to read off some synonyms for injustice, because injustice is like a big 40,000-foot word, and it's easy for us just to take it in our ears, kind of process it as a concept, and just let it go. But let me read some of these synonyms for injustice. And I want to ask you, because this is about us after all, how many of you have, like me, experienced some of these things? Unfairness. Anybody been in a situation where it's been unfair, either to you or to the people around you? Injustice. Unjustness. Inequity. Corruption. Cruelty. Brutality. Tyranny. Here's a big one. Despotism. Repression. Suppression. Exploitation. Bias. Prejudice. Bigotry. Favoritism. Partiality. One-sidedness. Discrimination. Partisanship. Intolerance. A wrong. An injury. An offense. Evil. Villainy. Crime. Sin, iniquity, misdeed, outrage, atrocity, scandal, disgrace, monstrosity, affront, grievance. How many of us have experienced injustice of some kind? Show of hands. 7 or 8 of us. All right. That was sarcasm for those of you listening at home. All of us have, do, will experience injustice. So Jesus is telling a story that culturally really fits and makes an impact for the people that are listening then, but is also deeply connected and related to our lives today. Let's continue on in this story. So she comes to the judge. She says, all those synonyms, protect me. But here's what the unjust, selfish judge does. He never gives her the time of day. Why wouldn't he give her the time of day? She's a woman. She's got nothing that she can provide for him because she has nothing. No back scratching can be had. Nothing to gain. He never gives her the time of day, but after this went on and on, he said to himself, I care nothing what God thinks, and even less what people think. Hey-ya! John, help me. Oops. But because this widow won't quit badgering me, I'd better do something and see that she gets justice. Otherwise, I'm going to end up beaten black and blue by all her pounding. What do we see? Persistence pays off. Yeah, you got it. The one word that I want you to take away today. He doesn't care at all, whether she lives or dies, really, whether she benefits or not, whether the other person who's doing wrong is ever corrected, he doesn't care. But what does it say? I better do something and see that she gets justice. Otherwise, in the word in the original language, literally gives us the idea of giving him a black eye. She's going to give me a black eye. Like, socially a black eye, like as a judge, I'll get a black eye, like if I'm seen as not giving justice. So he relents and he gives in. Then the master, Jesus, is telling the story. Do you hear what that judge, corrupt as he is saying? What's he saying? Come on, think. What is he saying? I just rattled off a summary, but I want you to process it. He says persistence pays off, yes. Kind of on the negative. That's what the judge is kind of expressing, the negative side of that, right? I am annoyed. I am going to suffer if I don't intervene in the suffering of this other person. Then Jesus flips it. Because Jesus does this all the time. So what makes you think God won't step in and work justice for his chosen people who continue to cry out for help? Won't he stick up for them? Jesus says, I assure you that he will. What has Jesus just done? He's flipped it around. How is he describing our Father now? Is our Father like the judge? No. What's our Father like according to Jesus? Sleepy today. What's our Father like according to Jesus? He's just. What else? Yeah. He won't hesitate. He won't hesitate to work out justice for his people. His people. The people that he's chosen, the people that he's given his name to, the people that he's played out his glory over generations for. He's not going to drag his feet, Jesus says. So Jesus sets up this difference, right? He differentiates between this judge who doesn't care about anyone but himself and our Father. And it's all related to this sense of justice. It's all related to this sense of things being the way that they're supposed to be. He will not drag his feet, but how much of that kind of persistence, Jesus says, how much of that kind of persistent faith will the Son of Man find on earth when he returns? You know, I wish we could bring Elmo back for this because it's really quite this simple. Jesus has plunked this story right down in the midst of him teaching and talking about the kingdom of heaven, right? Just a few chapters earlier, he says something like, hey, whatever's going on, whatever is happening within you, you ought to seek first the kingdom of heaven. Seek first the kingdom of heaven. Some words later in that verse, it says something like, don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to seek because our Father loves to give his kids the kingdom. And here's really where it kind of comes home for me. This idea of praying and persevering in prayer and praying persistently that's not the spiritual discipline I think that's on display here. And the idea of praying persistently so that my needs or wants can be met, I don't think that's what's on display here either, because of this great story that Jesus is telling and where he plunks this conversation about persistence down, I think he's talking about us having this picture of our Father, but also of his kingdom, fully in view all the time. This is what I gather from the last sentence here in verse 8. How much of that kind of persistent faith will the Son of Man find on the earth when he returns? The widow shows us, illustrates us what persistent faith looks like. Was she in pain? Was she at a loss because she suffered some injustice? Yes. What is the injustice contrary to? What is it? What's really being violated here? The culture and the values of the kingdom of heaven are what's being violated. The life that our Father spoke into existence at the beginning and that sin just marred and polluted and messed up. The life before. And here's this beautiful picture. And gosh, I love how Jesus does this. He platforms one of the most vulnerable people in all of humanity. One of the weakest, lowest persons, personalities, socially, politically, economically, he platforms a widow who is insisting that the kingdom comes. She's insisting that the world be like the world is supposed to be. He wraps this entire conversation about persisting in prayer around this idea of God's kingdom being manifest in our everyday lives. It's kind of, we can miss it if we read through it too fast. And I think for me, again, I said where this all comes home is this idea that what I'm really persisting in, what I'm really insisting on, what I'm really depending on the Father for is that his kingdom will come. That his will be done in my life, through my life, in your life, through your lives, right here, the way that it's done in heaven. Persistence. I don't think it's so much like a vending machine thing where if you shake God hard enough, long enough, what you want comes out. I don't think that's the point of the story. But the point that Jesus is making is, listen, this is the way the world should be. Listen, judges shouldn't be selfish. Judges shouldn't be this way. That is injustice in and of itself. So he platforms this very weak woman as a very powerful woman. And he puts her up against who should be very powerful and ends up looking pretty weak. He is operating under values and in a culture that is contrary and oppositional to the values and the culture of the kingdom of heaven. And she just keeps on insisting that God's will would be done. How much of that kind of persistent faith will the Son of Man find on earth when he returns? We could take the rest of today and tomorrow and the next day, and each of us could take a turn talking about the things in our lives that have grieved us. We can talk about the moments, the times when we've longed for something and it didn't come, and we kept asking for it and it didn't come. We can talk about, my goodness, the loved ones that we prayed for and lost anyway. We can talk about that we should have been the people in line for the promotion and we didn't get it anyway. We can lay all those things out, and we can be so hyper-focused on our pain of those moments that we lose track of the kingdom. And I'm not going to stand up here in front of you and tell you that I'm okay with the way things have turned out in my life in those instances. Some of them have been fine. I prayed for my parents to know Jesus for 20 years, and then I gave up because I didn't think it was ever going to happen. And then it did. But I can tell you plenty of other stories in my life when I persisted, when I banged on the door of heaven, so to speak, and things didn't turn out the way that I thought they should, that I wanted them should. And that's a hard thing to wrap our minds around. It's a hard thing to incorporate into this idea of the kingdom of heaven. Our own pain often can get in the way of our vision of heaven, our vision of the kingdom of heaven here in our time. And like me, on many occasions, it can put us in a position of hopelessness and of giving up. So Jesus rounds out this one story in Luke 18, verse 8, but how many people will Jesus find persisting, longing, living into this idea of the kingdom come in our midst? So we're going to talk about prayer now, because after all, in verse 1, Jesus says that this whole shooting match, that it was necessary for them to pray consistently and never quit. So let's talk about that in your life and in my life here for the remaining time that we have. This idea of praying constantly, praying all the time, praying with persistence. It is the illustration that the widow gives us of insisting on the kingdom come. And so I find, just like we said in the beginning of this series, that if we practice this spiritual discipline, it sharpens our senses and helps us to understand what God is up to. At least see it. At least hear it. We may not understand it fully, but at least we can see that he's moving and hear that he's speaking. So here is a form of prayer that we want to just expose you to. It's one way that the church has kind of wrapped our minds around praying all the time, praying without ceasing, praying persistently. If you were in our prayer Sunday seminar earlier, you learned a little about the breath prayer. We've talked about it a couple of times in here. And it just gives you an idea of how you can go about your normal life while still insisting that the kingdom would come. It gives you an idea a little bit of how you can be going through your normal day and continually reframing the picture in your mind of what's happening around you by the terms and the values of the kingdom rather than what you might naturally come to the conclusion of. So, breath prayer. And this is just a simple practice, I think, that presents this counter-narrative to what we might believe going on in the world. So if you are in agony, if you feel like you're alone, maybe like the widow, you're weak, you're vulnerable, there's nothing you can do about it, you're going through a situation that you don't understand and you feel like you can't affect a change, here's a little breath prayer. And the way I think it was taught, right, the first phrase, you kind of inhale, you breathe in, and then you exhale on the last phrase. So let's just practice this. My soul finds rest in you alone. It's as natural as breathing. So with every breath, we reframe our expectations for the world around us, for our very day, for that interaction, for that stretch of pain. My soul finds rest in you alone. That's a reframing. My soul isn't finding rest in more money. My soul isn't finding rest in revenge or vengeance. My soul isn't finding rest in any number of things that I could take into my body that would make me feel numb or better or whatever. My soul finds rest in God alone. See how this was a reframing? The widow insisted, this is you and I insisting on the kingdom come. When we're struggling with the world around us, when we're a little unsure about what's happening or what we ought to do, when also that makes us exhausted like it always does, we can identify that we don't have to figure all this out on our own. Shepherd. Lead me beside still waters. Right? It's a proclamation of who he is and who we are. It's a request of what we need in the moment. It's super consistent with the kingdom of heaven. Here's the breath prayer of the widow, except not to the unjust judge, but to our Father, the King. My hope is in you. Protect me. How many situations in our lives would that be relevant for? I can get out the cinnamon, the synonym list one more time. So many. My hope is in you. Protect me. You are the one that doesn't drag your feet. You are the one that dispenses justice. You are the one that comes and puts things back and restores things. You are the one whose wings I can hide under. You are the one that lifts my head, Scripture tells us. All of these images of how the Father chooses to interact with us, longs to interact with us in our human suffering. My hope is in you. Protect me. Oh my goodness. You ever had a person in your life that's really hard to love or even like? Oh my gosh. I've never had that happen to me, of course. Here's this this beautiful imagery in the Psalms where the psalmist says, God, if you would enlarge my heart, I will run in your ways. Enlarge my heart, my heart's capacity to love this other person. What does that mean to love them in the way that we're told to love others? The second greatest command in Scripture, love your neighbor as you love yourself. Enlarge my heart is too small. I'm confessing that I'm incapable of relating to this person in a way that's consistent with the kingdom. My heart is too small. Pain and brokenness has constricted it down to the point where I cannot pour myself out for this other person. So the psalmist has a breath prayer. It says, enlarge my heart, and then I can run in your ways, not just walk, not just crawl, not just shamble, but I can run in a way that exemplifies your kingdom, in a way that puts your love on display and promotes it. I can do that, God, but right now I'm really struggling with this person, so enlarge my heart. Expand my heart for whoever it is, whatever it is. This is one way that we can be persistent. This is one way that we can keep on moving in the direction of the kingdom of heaven. So I want to say this to you because it can be tricky. If you're asking for, a raise because you deserve it and you've been looked over, well, that's one thing to talk about, but you're missing the point, I think, just a little, if that's all you're persisting in. Father, remove my pain. That's a fine thing to pray for. But if that's all we're praying for, can I poke you in the eye? Don't we sound like the judge just a little bit? Persist. Persist in trusting, living, praying for his kingdom come in your life. As the band comes up, I want to just give us a few moments together. I want to ask you to think about some situation that's going on in your life right now, whatever it is. You're about to graduate from college and you don't know what's next. Huh? That's a real one. Or high school and you don't know what's next. You've got weddings coming up. There's a few of those folks in here. You've got big decisions on moving and housing and jobs, and some of us are sick. Some of us are broken. Whatever it is that's at play in your life right now, whatever the injustices might be, wherever the ways it feels like your life is being emptied out of you and you have no control over it right now, I want you to name it in your head. I want you to come to that place where you're actively processing what Jesus just is telling us to do. Make it real for yourself. And I want you to think about just those few words, a truth about God and what you desire in the situation. My hope is in you. Protect me. Father of love, expand my heart for my neighbor, my husband, my wife, my children, whatever, whomever. I just want you to take some time right now and just you and Jesus, just together, just insist that the kingdom be real right now in your life. Almighty Father, I'm afraid. Protect me. Lover of my soul, renew my heart. Father of mercy, forgive me. Father, as our listening and our praying give way to what's next, God, I pray as you hear the prayers of my friends, your people, your chosen ones here in this space, God, that you, Lord, will encourage them, that you, God, will pull the lid, the curtains back, God, and give them glimpses of your kingdom come in the situations that they've identified, God, that you've brought to their minds. God, give them another picture. Give them an alternative story to look at and to tell. God, instead of all the ways that they might feel vulnerable or trapped or powerless or helpless, God, begin to give them a glimpse of the resurrection life that you promise each and every one of us in Jesus. I pray this for my friends and for myself. Jesus, in your name, amen.